This is Jim Inkster, and welcome to Talk Louisiana. Hope you had a great weekend. The New Orleans Saints now have the best record in the National Conference and have won their division after defeating Tampa Bay 28-14 yesterday. And two taxes passed in East Baton Rouge Parish, a tax for a mental health center, 68-32%, and more than 60% of the people of our parish voted for a half-cent sales tax for road improvements. And Kyle Ardoin is the Secretary of State for at least the next 10 months. He defeated Gwen Collins Green up 59-41%. The race was almost 50-50 in East Baton Rouge Parish, but Kyle Ardoin won the race by winning convincingly in rural areas across the state. He received more than 85% of the votes in Livingston Parish. And in studio is Daryl Papillon, former president of the Louisiana Bar Association, past president of the Baton Rouge Bar Association, and of the Baton Rouge Rotary Club. Quite a man about town. He is with Walters Papillon Thomas & Cullens, LLC, and they are an underwriter of WRKF. And he is here to talk about the world as we know it. And right now, much of the legal wheels are churning in Washington, D.C. Federal prosecutors said on Friday that President Trump directed illegal payments to ward off a potential sex scandal that threatened his chances of winning the White House in 2016, putting the weight of the Justice Department behind accusations previously made by his former lawyer. That lawyer, Michael Cohen, has said that as the election neared, Mr. Trump directed payments to two women who claimed they had affairs with Donald Trump, and one of those is the pornographic film star Stormy Daniels from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, who was in town yesterday, by the way, at the state capitol, protesting the new law requiring strippers in Louisiana to be 21 years of age. But Daryl Papillon, there's already talk of impeachment proceedings beginning with the Democratic-controlled House that will take office in a few days. What do you think about where this is going right now?
Well, it's a fascinating time to be a lawyer or a journalist or an American. A lot is happening, and even when we think back to the Watergate investigation, this is really unprecedented in American history, Jim. We've not been in a situation where there is so much happening in terms of investigation and the types of things that are coming out, which involve a sitting president of the United States, the leader of the free world.
Well, it could be a replay of 1998, and it was December 19th of 98 that Bill Clinton was impeached by the House of Representatives. And then in the Senate, he was not convicted. In fact, no count against him received a majority. And it would take two-thirds of the Senate to convict a president and remove him from office, and that means 67 senators. And let's face it, senators like John Neely Kennedy and William Morgan Cassidy, they're not likely to vote to impeach or to convict President Trump under any circumstances. It's just probably not going to happen.
I just don't see it happening. And I think I would, you know, from a governmental standpoint, a political standpoint, I believe that the new majority in Congress should be careful, because the consequence of the impeachment of the president could be very serious in terms of what it does, and I think that we should all be very careful.
Well, this will play out in the year to come, and we are in an election year in 2019 in Louisiana, and then in 2020 the president will presumably be running for re-election, but it would seem that any number of things involving the president are subject to investigation, and the Mueller probe indicates that it is a wide-ranging probe, and it has been relatively secretive. We haven't had a lot of leaks, so we don't know a great deal, but a lot of people around the president are either under legal exposure right now, perhaps will be going to jail, some already have. What does this mean, if anything, right now?
Well, I think it's fascinating in the study of Bob Mueller, the way he operates. He is the sort of classic lawyer's lawyer. He is clearly, slowly and methodically building something. It's clear he's building something, and he's got hours and hours of interviews with key people, and he's got you know, all of these people who have either pled to things, they're cooperating with the government, or they're partially cooperating with the government, which is opening them up to potentially other problems because they're maybe not keeping their agreements with the special counsel. I think anyone who at least follows what's in the popular press would have to believe that the special counsel has a lot more that will come out in the next few weeks.
And in a separate case on Friday, the special counsel, Robert Mueller, accused Paul Manafort, Mr. Trump's campaign chairman, of lying about his contacts with an individual they accuse of ties to Russian intelligence and about his interactions with Trump administration officials after he was indicted on criminal charges. Now, the investigation began as an investigation into Russian interference into the 2016 election. Apparently, there is still some of that that is under scrutiny, maybe more than a little bit, but it's analogous, I think, to the Whitewater investigation, which began as an investigation into a failed land deal in Arkansas and ultimately ended up with Bill Clinton being tried in the House and the Senate for lying about an affair with Monica Lewinsky. It started with Paula Jones and then ended with Monica Lewinsky, the perjury charge. But this is going in all kinds of different directions, and so the president, Justice Bill Clinton did, is calling this a witch hunt. Does he have a case?
Yeah, I think that the president does a lot of, I don't know, it's certainly very modern media strategy. He is the first Twitter president, and he tries to define the game in the popular press on Twitter. But at the end of the day, these investigations are continuing. I suspect, and it's just a speculation on my part, but I think others are speculating the same way, there's going to be a lot of litigation about this, because if the special counsel does uncover evidence that the president colluded, or that he directed people like Cohen to break the law, can the sitting president of the United States be charged with a crime? That's a lot of legal scholars say he can't. But then, what is going on with Manafort, for example? Why was he not truthful with the special counsel, as the special counsel says, once he said he would cooperate? Is he going to be pardoned? Mm-hmm. Presidential power to pardon is vast, but usually when the president is issuing pardons, the president's not involved. It's a question of, well, should this person who served a long jail sentence be pardoned? Is it obstruction of justice to dole out pardons to people who could implicate you in some way? Can he be prosecuted when he leaves office? Does this add fodder to the call for impeachment? Does it put senators, who normally, as I would think, there's almost no chance that he'll be convicted with the current composition of the U.S. Senate, unless there's extremely compelling evidence. But does the political heat get so hot on people when facts do come out? It's just going to be fascinating. I think they're going to sell a lot of newspapers, Jim.
Yeah, and in the 11 SEC states, the president carried every one of them, senators are unlikely to buck the preferences of the electorate. And in all 11 states, the president is above water in polls. He's certainly below water in most of the rest of the country. But that would mean that 21 of the 22 U.S. senators from the get-go in the 11 SEC states would be unlikely to vote for the president to be convicted on any charges the House may levy against him. And so it only takes 33 votes, 34 actually, 34 to get rid of a president. So it would seem to be a heavy lift and one that is unlikely to happen. But the president says he could pardon himself, and ultimately that could go to the U.S. Supreme Court. That would be an interesting scenario.
It could be a constitutional crisis, and I think it is the kind of thing that is just so unparalleled and so fascinating. What happens when the president says he can, and the U.S. Supreme Court says you cannot? The current acting attorney general has said that there's a list of U.S. Supreme Court cases that he thinks are that have been decided. He says they're wrongly decided. The first one is the 1789 decision of Marbury versus Madison, which set the standard for the United States Supreme Court to be able to interpret the Constitution and decide questions like this. So what happens if we live in a government where the Supreme Court can't decide whether the president cannot pardon himself? It's just, it's fascinating.
We're visiting with Darryl Papillon, former president of the Louisiana Bar Association and of the Baton Rouge Bar Association, prominent attorney here in Baton Rouge. He's with Walters Papillon Thomas Cullins, and they are an underwriter of WRKF, and we're going to take a brief pause, and then we'll return with Darryl Papillon and get his take not only on the ongoing Mueller probe, but what relevance, if any, does this have in Louisiana? Should the people in our state really care about this, and is it going to drive the markets? Are there going to be implications way beyond the legality of whether or not the president adhered to the law? We'll talk about it with Darryl Papillon when we return with more Talk Louisiana right here on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster, and thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. And Darryl Papillon, noted attorney, is with us, and we're talking about the Mueller probe. And Louisiana is, of course, a state with a horse in the race, as is every other state in the country. And we do have some personalities in our state who are front and center. Stormy Daniels is certainly a now one of the most famous Baton Rougeans. She has made the allegation that she received $130,000 in hush money, an allegation, by the way, that has been corroborated by the president. He wouldn't call it hush money, but he says he paid her $130,000. And whether this constitutes a campaign finance violation is something for the courts to decide and perhaps for the U.S. House to decide. But nonetheless, we're going to have lots of investigations. And Darryl Papillon, what happens when the House, as it most likely will do, ask for the president's tax returns?
Yeah, that's going to be very, very, very interesting. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't think any of us knows. You know, I think it'll be, again, like with so many of these things, a matter, perhaps a matter for the courts to decide. Congress, you know, operates in, has its own special powers. I don't know what's going to happen.
And it could end up being another 5-4 vote by the Supreme Court. And some are saying that the swing vote, if you can call it that, would come from the Chief Justice, John Roberts.
Which is so ironic because, you know, when he was appointed to the court, he was expected to be another in the sort of the, I guess, almost the centerpiece of a sort of an arch conservative kind of court. But Roberts is someone who cares and takes his role as Chief Justice so seriously that the reputation of the court is important to him. And I think that he is going to work very hard to try and analyze things from all sides, particularly in terms of trying to ensure that the court's reputation remains as strong as it can be.
Well, last week the president announced that he will nominate William Barr to be the permanent attorney general, and this is a gentleman who at the age of 47 was attorney general under the first President Bush from 91 to 93, but he's also on the record as stating that the president is right in a lot of these disputes he has regarding the Mueller probe. Do you think maybe that's why he ended up in front of the pack for the job?
I think in one thing about this administration is that usually, especially the next appointment, seems to be someone really in step with the president, which is interesting in terms of Ayers, the person who the press was reporting was going to be the new chief of staff, and that lasted about 36 hours before he said, I've got a young family and I think I'm going to go back to Georgia, because he is a young guy, and I don't know that people who are really young and have other and it's not to sound like, of course, being the chief of staff to the president of the United States is a very prestigious and a great career move, but he didn't think it was. He decided he would go back to Georgia.
And the president did sack his chief of staff, John Kelly. General Kelly will soon be a goner, and the Trump administration has been a veritable merry-go-round when it comes to high-ranking personnel, and now we have Jeff Sessions gone as attorney general. Looks like William Barr is likely to be confirmed. He's been confirmed once before, and the Senate, of course, takes heed to precedent, as do the courts, and Barr is most likely going to replace this man, Matthew Whitaker, who is a controversial interim appointee. But why should the people of Louisiana care about this? What is the reason for people in a state like Louisiana to care whether the president is under siege and perhaps subject to indictment or impeachment?
Well, the president of the United States, of course, is not only the most important person in our country, he's the most important person in the world. And we've seen that by merely making a public statement, he can affect the stock market to the tune of a few hundred points in a day. He can affect government policy with his executive orders and with regulations. He controls appointments subject to the confirmation by the Senate, but his people run the government. And so if the president is distracted by this, it takes away from his ability to lead. If we find ourselves like we were in Louisiana in August of 2005, and we were on the business end of two very serious hurricanes, President Bush was not distracted, and we had issues about who did what or who could have done more, but the president wasn't fighting a special counsel. We were working to give aid to our people. So we need our government to work. And I think, in addition, Jim, we have some prominent members of our congressional delegation who will certainly factor into this. Steve Scalise will no longer be in the majority party, but he is, of course, a very significant figure in the Republican leadership. Cedric Richmond is the head of the Black Caucus, and the Democrats will be in control. Most of those, I think all of those people are Democrats, and so our delegation will likely be busy with any investigation of the president by the Democrats, and there may be a lot of them. At least that's what we're hearing. Now it's time to investigate since they have the majority.
And one of the big topics of discussion involving the president of the United States as we move forward and see where all this goes, Darryl Papillon, is how this is analogous to 1998. It was 20 years ago that President Clinton was impeached, and some are saying that Democrats, from a political standpoint, would be better off just letting the president twist in the wind. If Mike Pence became the president, he might be more electable than Donald Trump in 2020. Are there political aspects to this discussion?
There always are. And, in December of 2018, it's just, I guess, too early to know, because it just remains to be seen, what will Robert Mueller release in those reports? What are these witnesses saying? There's just so much. And, the fascinating thing is, politically, half the country believes it is a witch hunt. If we go back to the traditional SEC, that the message that this needs to end is one that the senators are saying. Our own Senator Kennedy recently said that this has been going on about long enough, and it's time to show what you have. And there's some truth to that, because this has been a very long investigation. So what does he have?
Long, but historically, as we know, the Whitewater investigation was much longer. It was 7 or 8 years. So this is not in any way equal to that. But there are signs that we are getting close to the end game of the Mueller probe, and then we'll see what happens. And Darryl Papillon, I'm sure, will be eager and we hope willing to talk about what's going on in our world. And it is a fluid situation, so we will follow it, and I don't think anybody's covering it any better than National Public Radio. Since we last visited with you, Darryl, I know you have had a personal tragedy, losing your wife, and that's something that a man of your age should never have to endure, and you certainly have some beautiful children, but I know it's been quite a process for you.
Jim, thank you for that. It has been. I was married for 27 years very happily, and my wife died of cancer in September, and so 2018 has been a surreal year. But, in the midst of that, you find out that you have lots of friends, and we're doing the best we can. Thank you.
And you're joining us today after having your wisdom teeth removed.
I did. You remembered that. Yes, I tried for 30 years to keep them inside my head, and they were successfully extracted. I tell you what, I told someone if I could, if I'd known that you could eat all the ice cream that you want, I would have done it one at a time.
And at your wife's funeral, I'm told that you became a big hero of Delta Airlines. What happened there?
Well, I had something really amazing happen to us. My wife wanted to go to France, and we were going to Lourdes about 2 months, 6 weeks before she died, and we had some equipment delays and problems in New Orleans. And in the air, I started to explain to the flight attendant that we would have trouble making our connection to Paris. And I didn't know this, but Delta Airlines has a fleet of cars that shuttle people around, and they basically drove us to the Air France terminal. We made the plane on time, and the person who did that ended up flying to Baton Rouge to come to my wife's funeral, and he made me cry, I can tell you that.
I'm sure that was the case, and for good reason, but... also, for good reason, Delta is using you as kind of a poster boy for its service. Sometimes airlines, as we know, can be troublesome, but this was a case where a big entity was a good Samaritan.
Yes, and they put us in some Delta publications because of that, but I'm thankful to them.
And Delta started right here in Louisiana. They used to hold all their annual meetings in Monroe until not so long ago.
Yeah, there was a clause, I think, that Monroe had jet service and had to have one board meeting at least. Few people realize that Delta is our Delta, and it was a crop dusting service. It was also once headquartered in New Orleans.
I'm sorry about the loss of your lovely wife.
Thank you.
27 years, and I know she fought a gallant battle, but... Thank you for joining us, and we'll follow what's going on with our president. Should be quite a fascinating year of 2019, and we'll be back with more Talk Louisiana after this pause for the news with Karen Henderson on 89.3 WRKF.